You are listening to The Edge, a podcast for personal development junkies and visionaries living right at the precipice of oh shit meets fuck yeah. I'm Nadia Munda, an embodiment and relationship coach and a lover of all edges. Stick around to listen to raw, unpolished conversations where we explore our personal and collective edges in all their erotic glory. If you are looking for a mentor this year that will really help facilitate the next level of potency in your leadership and in your erotic alchemy process, which just means learning how to amplify, transmute, and shift energies that sometimes can feel stagnant or heavy or challenging or contracting, and you want to turn them essentially into erotic electrifying turn on, and you want to play right at that edge that I like to call the erotic edge, then I highly recommend checking out my new program. It's a mentorship for my one-on-one clients that is all about us learning to become masters of Eros, learning how to work with the seasons of death and winter and loss and turn them into something, you know, from something that depletes us into something that fuels us. And so I highly, highly recommend checking out the page. It's nadiamunla.com/erotic edge. We've got a couple of different options for you. We have the way that I love to work is a 6-month container always. It's tried, tested, and true. I've been doing it for 9 years. And then there's also a 3-month container. If you are someone who likes to take everything and compact it a little bit more, if you're really working on going into an in-depth immersion over a smaller amount of time, if you don't have the space to go to sort of pull it out and do it over 6 months, then, you know, this 3-month package could be an option for you as well. In both cases, you get Voxer support from me. In both cases, you get the option to do a 2-day in-person erotic movement immersion with me, which also can be done online virtually on Zoom if you're someone who cannot travel, but you really want to do this. So there are so many options, but this is a combination of sort of traditional life coaching calls combined with an in-person immersion combined with in-between call support. So really it's the full, the full enchilada, ladies. So reach out, take a look at the site. And if you have any questions, you know where to find me. There's a direct link to apply there. That's always the best way to get on an exploration call with me where we really get a sense of whether it's a fit or not. Because in this particular program, I only take a handful of people a year. So I always love to hop on the phone and make sure that this is going to be a situation that's like win-win-win, where there's going to be magic and fireworks and it's going to be the best decision for you. All right. So I hope to talk to you soon.
So, actually, you know what I did? I pulled a card.
Oh, you did? Us,
which is not a tradition I have on this podcast.
I love it.
I just felt, you know, sitting from the altar and I was seeing all these Bali pieces connected to our trip and something said, pull a card. So, and guess who we got?
Ooh, Athena. I have to know the debt. Who'd we get?
Athena. Inner Ooh, wisdom.
Ooh, I love that.
And I was thinking about it. I was like, you know what? This feels so true because so much of trauma work is about like bringing ourselves back to the place of trusting our inner wisdom, which is really the wisdom of our body, the wisdom of our nervous system. So anyways, I just thought I should mention that. The other thing that I was doing before we started was I lit the candles, the really pretty candles I got when we were in Bali. I know there was like a little bit of a debate around whether to light pretty candles or not to light pretty candles. Yes. And I don't remember if on which side of the debate you were.
I was like, let's light them. So I normally don't. I'm like, save the pretty candle for, I don't even know when, but no, we have to light the pretty candle for us.
So I lit it for the first time, the 2 pretty candles.
Oh, I'm so glad that the pretty candles lit.
It's a very, very special day. I was like, okay, we're doing it. Sarah's coming on the podcast. Let's go. So yeah.
Anyways, oh, it's so good to be with you. I'm so, so happy. I have the best job ever that I get to bring on just the coolest people. And then I get to chat with them and be like, this is my job or part of my job. So thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love you and I love talking to you. And so this is kind of the best of both worlds. I get to be with you and chat with you, and I'm excited for what we might explore.
Yeah, it's, I just keep thinking back to, you know, it's really cool because you do all of this amazing work in the world, which I didn't realize until after we the way that we met was so organic, right? We're like next to each other. I mean, we had a dinner the night before, but we basically were on retreat together and we were like next to each other on a yoga mat, on two separate yoga mats to clarify. That would be a little weird.
Really cozy.
And we just like sunk into a flow. And I just felt I felt like our introduction was our two animal bodies, like, and our two nervous systems sort of like sussing each other out. And like, what a cool way to meet someone who actually does trauma education. Like, that's so cool. So I wanted to share that with people because even though, you know, you do such amazing work in the world, and I'm so in awe. Like once I realized what you did and follow all your stuff now, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she's so smart. Like before that, there was just this level of synchedness and like safety and just like security that I really felt being in motion next to you. So I love that. It was a very unique way in which I've met someone who's a new friend in my life.
Thank you so much for saying that. So the funny thing about me is like comments that people might not think are the best comments to me or compliments. So actually people probably wouldn't even think that's a compliment. To me, what you just said is such a high compliment because it's really about safety in our bodies. We're sending so much messaging all the time in our bodies. And I say this all the time to people, but a lot of time folks can feel like, oh, it's selfish to focus on my own, you know, like journey and my own healing when we have a whole world that needs things. And the truth is the most generous thing we can give to the world is regulation in our own nervous system, because it sends out a cue of safety to everybody around us. And our nervous systems read each other. It's called mirror neuron, via mirror neurons. So a regulated nervous system regulates a nervous system. And so it's just, yeah, it's anyway, thank you for the very big compliment. I felt that very much from you. And when we can just get quiet, our bodies will tell us, you know?
So much. So it's mirror neurons. Yeah. Was there a third word no, I got it right.
Mirror neurons. So it's fascinating that nervous systems of all mammals read each other. So I think it's humans were a weird species where we've like unanimaled ourselves because, you know, we're so intelligent. We aren't animals. And animals are in many ways, we are animals, first of all. But animals who aren't so stuck up in their prefrontal cortex or thinking brain are much more intelligent in a lot of ways than what we have been conditioned out of, really. Yeah. So we have these mirror neurons. It's so fascinating where we read one another. And the beautiful thing is a regulated nervous system makes you regulate. I don't know if I told you this, but as a kid growing up in a really dangerous, traumatizing house, we had one channel on TV and it was PBS. So you're very limited in what you get on PBS, but the good news is you get a lot of regulating nervous systems. So like my top three hits were Bob Ross. I don't know if anyone knows who he is, but he was a painter who could paint a picture in 30 minutes. And he's like, oh, it's a happy mistake. And let me draw a little tiny little tree. Anyway, he's very regulating. Mr. Rogers and Julia Child. Those were the three people in my childhood. And I didn't know what was happening, but when I turned it on, I just felt better.
Yeah.
So that's the power of a regulated nervous system. And, you know, the alternative is also true. So a dysregulated nervous system, we all know that kind of experience. Somebody who's really dysregulated, all of a sudden we're like, oh, I don't feel so good anymore. I was feeling really great. Now I feel scared or angry or whatever.
Yeah.
Our nervous systems are responding.
Mm. Yeah. I love that you brought these pieces in because we often in the more I mean, the personal development world that also is very in the like spiritual, mystical, new agey lingo, like we're often talking about embodiment, 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 right? And of course, in my work, I'm talking about that a lot. And it's often, it can be really easy to sort of miss the importance of embodiment because it just feels like such a vague concept. But what you just spoke to is essentially the gift of being an embodied person is that you are transmitting a sense of safety and comfort and love to the people around you, which is one of the most beautiful things that we can do. And of course, yes, we've been taught to achieve and do, but the being part is just as important because our animal bodies and this part, like you said, not like the, you know, not the, this part of our brain, but all the rest of it, our whole body, which is basically a brain. It's like, can actually sink into a level of knowing and the deep inner wisdom, essentially.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Yeah. Of that. Yeah. Bob Rawson.
I know it's a weird combo, the three of them, but I'll tell you what, they did
so like, wholesome, those guys.
It's a very wholesome experience watching those three.
So I remember when I first came across, you know, trauma education, the science behind everything that was going on in our nervous system, and I was like, my mind was blown, like, wait, what? Because I had been doing, I guess, like talk therapy for a while. I'm trying to think if there was any other modalities. I may have done a couple of other random things here and there, but it was primarily talk therapy, probably since my teens, and very consistently. And then started to really get into the work of somatic experiencing and understanding a little bit more about, yeah, just trauma education as a whole, and was like, whoa, why is no one in the coaching industry talking about this? And this was about, you know, 9-10 years ago. So the coaching world hadn't really gotten into the trauma sensitivity like trend, which I want to address in a minute. But I'm curious first to hear from you a little bit about your first like moment when you when you read something about like trauma science, or you just were like, whoa, trauma resolution. What, in what context was that, and what did it do for you?
Mm-hmm. It came, but before I went to do all my training and trauma work, I came to it first as a person that was desperate for healing. And I think, you know, sometimes the experience of folks who have more extreme traumas, it feels like there's no choice. I can't just cruise along. Cruising along wasn't an option for me because I wasn't cruising along. So it's either like, I have to figure this out, or I can't be here. That was my experience. So I started with talk therapy, and there were certainly benefits of that. I wouldn't say that that's not beneficial whatsoever, but it could only take me so far. And so I was gaining a lot of understanding of things, and I was understanding myself more. And I was also creating a safe relationship with my therapist, meaning it was really my first secure attachment that I was building. All of that's so beneficial. And there was no amount of talking that could actually remediate the shame I felt about what happened to me when I was a kid. It didn't actually make me not feel like I was bad or disgusting or awful or worthless. And it didn't matter how many times my therapist said, like, well, if someone else was in your shoes, wouldn't you see that like they were a really wonderful child? And it was, of course, I would say, yeah, I see that, but I cannot feel it. I can't feel what you're saying. Yeah. Or I was deeply depressed or experiencing paralysis in what's called our state of freeze, just like panicked and terror and anxiety. And there was no amount of talking that actually changed any of those things. And so it led me to finding somatic work. And I feel like usually folks find somatic work a little later after trying. And then through lots of research and lots of digging, then find this other way, like this missing, it's a missing piece. Mm-hmm. And then it began to change everything for me. I'm writing a book called You Make Sense. And the reason I have a program called You Make Sense too. And the reason why I call it that is, I started to say to all, like many years ago to lots and lots of folks, I would just, I just started reflexively saying, make sense to basically everything people were saying. And I realized, oh, that's what I wish someone would have shown me. And I remember when I started to feel like I make sense, because I just felt like I was broken, inherently wrong. I wasn't going to ever get better. Oh, you have to take a medication in order to like not have to experience this. I have to be on an SSRI the rest of my life and all of those kinds of things. And then realizing, oh, I'm actually not broken at all. Everything about me makes sense. It's actually exquisitely, perfectly working, which is what science shows us. And it changed everything for me. And then those experiences in my body that I couldn't talk myself out of, I realized, oh, but I can speak the language of the system that's keeping me stuck, which is called our autonomic nervous system. And when I talk to it in a way that it understands, which is not a verbal language, it responds. It just can't hear us when we're speaking a verbal language. It has no idea that we're even talking to it, which is why I'm sure people listening, a lot of people know the experience of you feel anxious about something coming up and you're like, you know, maybe you have to do a speaking event or you're going to a dinner and you get social anxiety and you're trying to talk to yourself out of it. You're like, no, I'm fine. This is going to be fine. It's going to be totally fine. I'm safe now. And your anxiety might increase or it doesn't go away at the very least. And that's because that's a cognitive intervention, meaning I'm trying to talk to a system that does not understand a cognitive intervention. So yeah, when I learned that, it changed everything. And then one big thing that it made me realize as I then came into my own many years of training is the mental health system is so archaic. It's it's fascinating to me. For example, the medical field has evolved so much. There was a time where there was one doctor. I mean, maybe my many past lives I experienced that, but you know, like the doctor's doing everything. So like, good luck. I don't know. They're like literally treating every possible thing you could have hundreds of years ago. And then we evolved to having many different specialists. So if I have an eye issue, I go to an ophthalmologist. If I have a heart issue, I go to a cardiologist, gastroenterologist for my gut, and hopefully they're doing functional holistic healing, but we have specialists. And mental health, and by the way, the public knows that. That's public knowledge. Like we know now, like the average person knows, oh, I see a specialist for a particular thing that I need to get resolved. Right. Mental health is not that way. It is still archaic in the sense that most people, if they're like, oh, I need some help, they go to Psychology Today and they put in like therapist in my area, or you look at your insurance provider, and what are you going to get? 90% of the time, you're going to get probably higher. 95% of the time, you're going to get a talk therapist or a psychodynamic therapist. Now that's a helpful component of healing. Yeah. But what the information that's not given to folks is that that's not everything. So we go to them thinking they're going to resolve everything. And it's kind of like this, or can help us resolve everything rather. Kind of like if I had an eye issue and somebody sent me to a great cardiologist. I'm like, this is the best cardiologist in the state. They're so great. They're so good at heart surgery. And I'm like, okay, I'll go to them. And they give me great heart surgery and it goes really well. And they say, yo, I don't know why your eyes are still bothering you. We did great heart surgery. And then what do? I internalize that. Like, I guess I can't get better. I guess I'm the problem. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we actually need to go see the ophthalmologist. And so somatic work, if we have things like a trauma history, if you have attachment trauma, so difficulty in relationships and relational dynamic, if you have a dysregulation, which is all of this is a result of trauma, but things like anxiety, worry, frustration, fear, terror, rage, you feel stuck in your life, you feel apathetic, hopeless, depressed, shut down, unsafe, it's all dysregulation. If you feel small, scared, out of control, those are clues that our young parts are present. All of those things can only be resolved somatically in our bodies, which means you can't talk therapy your way out of it. And so it frustrates me that I have so many folks come to me and they're like, oh, I've been searching for 10 years. Like we shouldn't have to spend 10 years searching for the right kind of help. It's hard enough to be struggling. And that's a systemic issue that is the fault of my fields. That's not the fault of the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you on that, because I remember like when I started the somatic tools, I was like, this is so efficient. I could have handled this like 20 years ago.
And there's this feeling of like, I mean, I was so grateful I eventually found it, but still this like, wait, like it could have happened earlier.
Yeah.
And I was just there talking and talking and talking. Right. Yeah. So it became such a key part also in the work that I do, because I was like, oh yeah, I want to offer a bottom up approach, a bottom up therapy instead of a top down, which is more of like the talk therapy, and knowing that both are very important, but that the world just didn't have enough offers of something that was a bottom up approach. And so the thing that really struck me was, I think it might have been like a snippet of a TED talk that I saw once many, many years ago. And I'm sorry, I do not remember who it is. We'll try to Google it and see if we can add it to the show notes. I'll try a bunch of random words and see what pops up. But essentially it was just demonstrating how we can say a sentence like, I suck, right? Or I feel amazing. So let's just start with like, I feel amazing, but like you're hunched over and you're all in a little ball. And it was just like showing how no matter how much you try to say, I'm amazing, you're like you're not going to feel amazing. And then also when you feel really open and you're just shining your heart out into the world and you're like, I suck, you can't believe that either. You're like, I don't suck, I'm great. What are you talking about? Right. And yeah, that to me was such a very, I mean, it's a very oversimplified, but a great demo of the efficiency of bottom-up approaches, because I was like, oh, it is so much more about the body than about the thoughts that we have in our mind. And it makes me think about something I really, really want to get your two cents on, which is like mantras and affirmations, okay, in the more like new agey sense, not in the very standard like yogic, you know, old ancient tradition. Because I've always had a little bit of a pet peeve myself. When I had, you know, early on when I had like the more typical life coaches that I used to hire in the beginning of my journey, there was often, and it still happens sometimes, where they try to get me to do like affirmations, you know, and or to like write a little mantra and put it on my altar. And I admit till this day, I still have I'm still challenged by it, because there's things that I'll write that just don't feel like I can't, like they feel so far away that it near, and I get that, like, I'm trying to live the big life and do the big thing and have the big dream and stay positive and all that good stuff. But there's something in my system that contracts so much when I read that sentence, whatever it may be in the moment, or if I try to say it, where there's this, it's nearly like my body's not believing what I am saying. And so there's this like misalignment between the energetic and the body posture and transmission and what I'm actually saying. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on it, just from like the science lens of things.
Yeah, well, I can join you in that. I can't, there's so many like retreats, like, I'm just thinking like many years ago, going these retreats and stuff, and people would be like, say these mantras or whatever, write these down on your vision board or whatever. And I felt like, well, I just must be the one that's fucked up here, because I cannot feel what you're telling me to feel. And everybody seems to be, I'm looking around, they seem to be feeling into what they're saying, and I couldn't feel it. I wanted to so much. And then I internalized that, like, well, must be something's wrong with me. I must not be trying hard enough. So,
yeah.
So here's the thing that I think is so important. It's really infuriates me, because I think there's a lot of people in the coaching industry doing harm unintentionally, but doing harm.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a lot of people in the therapeutic world doing harm. So just, there's a lot of harm everywhere. There's a lot of really good, but
yeah.
in this way, there's, it can be really problematic, because here's the thing, neuroscience and polyvagal theory, which is the theory of our autonomic nervous system, shows us that our autonomic state creates our story. So essentially within this system called our autonomic nervous system, there's six states, and a state simply means where you hang out in your nervous system. So it's your experience at any given moment. There's really only six experiences or six states, and there's a wide range of what it's like to experience that state, but there's only six states. Three of those are states of regulation, which means you feel good, present in here. Your nervous system has decided you're safe. And that's really the answer to a full happy life is we're predominantly living it in one of those three states. We can have all the things we want, but without that, we can't enjoy all the things. Then we have three states of dysregulation. And that simply means our nervous system doesn't think we're safe and it's protecting us. So the reason why we become dysregulated long-term is because of trauma. So our nervous system thinks that whatever happened is still happening or could happen at any given moment. So the three states are, and just want to explain this because I think it's so important for folks to understand regarding their thoughts and mindset. So the one's called our sympathetic nervous system. Lots of people may have heard of that. That's a state of dysregulation. And that's when your nervous system thinks there's danger, but we can do something about it. So this is all about the doing. Think of it like there's a lion and my system's like, you can run away from this lion, go, 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 do, do, do. So when we're here, there's so much energy in our body. It feels like there's a ticking time bomb in the corner of the room. I have to now. Our thoughts are going to be racing and I have to either fight the thing, flee the thing. So it's all about doing, lots exploding with sensation and energy, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
And then, or it doesn't feel good. And then we have a state called our dorsal vagal complex. That's the polar opposite of all that doing. Think of it like a bear in hibernation. It's 500 million years old, this system. And we only go here when our nervous system says, I don't think we can fight this thing. And I don't think we can get away from it. But what we can do is leave our body so that we don't have to feel the perpetual pain of what we can't stop. When I learned that, I was like, whoa. And I thought I was broken. Like, that's not broken. That's an exquisitely working system. Like, when humans have let us down, our nervous system never has, not for 1 second. It has always been there. And dysregulation is so painful. But I just want folks to know that when you're experiencing that, your system's not confused and it's not broken and it's not trying to hurt you. It's saying, my love, I don't think this is safe. And I'm going to do everything to make sure you're safe. If I have to choose between people, the life you want, purpose, or you staying alive, I will always choose you. It always puts us first. It's taught me a lot. My nervous system has taught me a lot about what unconditional love is. So anyway, this shutdown state, it's called dorsal. And when we're here, this is where apathy, hopelessness, depression, dissociation, all this. I liken it to being in outer space, like you're floating away with no tethered cord. So those are two polar opposite states. And then there's this one state called freeze. And freeze is a doozy. Well, they're all kind of a doozy to experience, but freeze is equal parts your sympathetic nervous system. So lots of energy met with shutdown. And so this is, think of like a deer in headlights. So when we're here, we have all this energy inside, but we can't, we're trapped. So like, I have to, but I can't, I have to, but I can't. Simple example of this is like, I have to start this business. I got to start this thing. And you sit down at your computer and you're like, there's so many things. Where do I even start? Do I have a designer? Do I get my photos done? Oh my God, it's too much. I can't do this. I have to go to sleep. No, but I have to do this thing. No, but I have to go to sleep. No, I'm going to organize my soup spoon drawer instead of doing this. And then I like come back and you're like, I can't wait to clean the toilet. And then you come back because you're still not doing the thing. So that's all freeze. Anyway, so just, I needed to paint the picture of those three to then explain our thoughts. So here's what polyvagal theory shows us. The state you're in fuels your thinking. So the thoughts are a symptom or a result of the state that you're in. So let's say like the sympathy, I think of it like every state has a lawyer. And the lawyer's job is to argue their case of why you have to stay in dysregulation, that state. So think of like sympathetic. We've got a sympathetic lawyer. So what, that's all the doing. So they're going to be saying things like, you have to do this now. If you don't do this now, things are going to fall apart. You have to have control over everything. They're mad at you. You better check on check on them, because I think they're going to be mad at you and you get to resolve that thing. And it's just going to be racing thoughts there. Not how you have to do something. Dorsal thoughts. There's a lawyer there. They talk a lot slower and they say things like this. It's too late for you. You'll never find it. You can't have a kid now. It's too late. You missed it. You'll never find a partner. Nobody wants you. You don't belong. There's something wrong with you. It's never going to be different. It's never going to be better. It's not possible. So that's dorsal. They sound really different. And then freeze, they both show up arguing to you different things. One's saying, we got to do this thing. The other saying, no, we can't do this thing, but we have to, but we can't. And you're like behind the jury stand hearing both of them like, holy shit, what do I even do? Okay. So when we're in regulation, there's also a lawyer there, and that lawyer is only going to be telling you things that are true based in the here and now, and that are true about who you actually are. So the ventral lawyer is when we're in regulation, they're going to be saying things to us like, our thoughts are going to be like, I'm okay. I'm safe. I am worthy of love. There is abundance everywhere. My truth is right and real, and so on and so forth. But if we aren't in regulation, we can't even hear that lawyer. So it's like, I'm in my sympathetic state, let's say, of do. There's a lion chasing me. So your nervous system literally thinks there's a lion chasing you. Mm-hmm. And then you try to tell yourself,
I am beautiful.
I am so beautiful right now. Like, just imagine that. Me and you are running from a lion. And then you're like, someone told me to say these mantras. I am safe to rest. I'd be like, well, that's fucking dumb. I'm not going to be safe to rest. I need to survive this lion attack. Bye. Yeah. Right? So this is why. So all this is to say, our state creates our story. A very simple, applicable example for people listening. I do an exercise when I map folks' nervous system with them, and we look at these lawyers. What are they saying based on where we are in our nervous system? This woman who I got permission to share this, she's married for 30 years. And here's her story based on where she was in her nervous system about her partner of 30 years. So when she was in dorsal, she's in her late 60s. In dorsal, the story that she would hear, because remember, this is, it's not possible for me. The story was, I married the wrong person and I can never go back and change it. Like, if that's not a dorsal story, I don't know what it is. I'm like, oh God, that's like heavy. You just want to go to sleep. When this is a person who doesn't swear in her daily life. So she was very surprised what the sympathetic lawyer said. When she's in sympathetic, feeling frustrated and stuff in an argument, her sympathetic lawyer would say, fuck Frank, fuck that guy. And that guy has never helped with anything. And he didn't help with the kids and he didn't help with this. And I'm so tired of Frank, and Frank sucks and blah, 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 blah. And when she realized it, she was like, oh my gosh, that lawyer is very loud talking to me in sympathetic. In regulation, the lawyer said to her, so this was her actual truth based in the present moment. It's not easy, but I'm really glad to be going through life with Frank. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? Look how different these stories are. So if we're in dysregulation, which a lot of mindset work is doing, is trying to do, it's trying to do something that's literally physiologically not possible. So I show up on a call with a coach and I'm having anxiety, and they're telling me to say mantras about how I am safe to embody my purpose or whatever. And I can't feel them. It's actually not possible to feel them because your nervous system thinks you're running from a lion. It doesn't believe you. It's like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. We're not safe. It doesn't think we're safe. So instead of focusing on battling our thoughts or trying to force ourselves to believe something our nervous system won't believe when we're in dysregulation, what we have to do is turn towards regulation. And then when we're in regulation, what I ask people to do is, even if you have like one moment where you feel more present, just ask yourself, what's true? What's true? Even if it's like, oh, for these 5 moments, I feel more here. What's actually true? What's true about me? What's true about my life? What's true about the world? And just see if you can feel that, because that creates new neural pathways. And that means it's a reflex for us to be able to come back to that thought. But that's where our truth is. And that's where the mantras actually can permeate. And one last quick thing, we want to work with, when we're in regulation, work with the level, if we're using a mantra, let's say, of a mantra that's within our capacity. So like, if I say something that's like, I am safe to make $1 billion. Well, yes. I can tell you right now, that's not in my capacity. That's not where I am right now.
Me neither.
But if I say that, I don't feel it, right? But what I might be able to say is, wherever I currently am financially, like, what would be a stretch from here? But also, how is there so much abundance in my life today? So like, whoa, I have running water. Whoa, that beautiful bird that just landed on that tree. Mm-hmm. This flower, I might be the only one that smells this flower. That's so abundant. Like, nobody else is stopping to smell these flowers because they think I'm just crazy smelling flowers all day. But that's absorbing abundance in a somatic way versus just like, I'm going to have, for anyone who's like an entrepreneur, like a lot of business coaches can do this. Like, what's your goal? I'm going to have $1 million a year. I don't even know what that means. If you're not feeling it, like, what is that? Mm-hmm. So really coming into like, what's my capacity around feeling into that?
Yeah. And so would you recommend for people who are, let's say, looking at their mirror or their altar and they're seeing this mantra and it's like not, they're like, I can't feel it. I can't feel it. And let's say it is within their capacity. So it's not like the $1 billion or whatever. Yeah. That it isn't within their capacity, but that day, right, they're like not feeling it, or this season, they're not feeling it. Are you suggesting that those abundance practices of like going out, smelling the flower, noticing where all the places that I am rich,
yes,
is the way to then regulate your nervous system?
That's right. So it does a couple of things. It regulates your nervous system for sure. But it also, I say that somatic work is show, not tell. Our nervous systems need to be shown, not told. So let's say I have all these like things on my wall that says, I am safe to be seen. I am safe to take up space. I am safe to be heard. I am safe to receive, like wonderful things that we all want. Mm-hmm. But think about this. If I have a trauma history where it wasn't safe to be seen, when I was seen, bad things happened, or people belittled me, or I was told I was wrong. I have this whole history, and we each have like a database or a computer system within us with all of our lived experience. So let's say all my lived experience is saying it's not safe to be seen. And I write this mantra, like I'm safe to be seen. My nervous system is kind of like, I feel like I'm an advocate for our nervous system, but I almost imagine it laughing at us. Like, okay, you wrote this on a sticky note that you're safe to be seen. No, you're not. Look at all this evidence. I love you. I'm not going to just take a sticky note's word for it. And that'd be like, think of what a bad parent I would be if I had a child who was not safe to be seen. And then some adult babysitter said to me, who I just met, they said like, they're safe with me. I'd be like, that's weird to even say out loud. I don't know why you're saying that. You have to earn my trust. Mm-hmm. And so we have to earn, our nervous system needs data. It needs to know that we are actually safe to be seen. So what I would want folks to get into the practice of, like, think of what's the thing, like, or maybe there's all of those things that you have written down. And then I want you to think to yourself, okay, how can I start giving my nervous system data that is true? Mm-hmm. And we want to start with, there are no small steps. So something that if you know what I'm about to say, like smiling at someone when you go on a walk. And if you're thinking to yourself, because I know people sometimes think this, like, how the heck is that going to get me to building a business? Smiling at someone on a walk? I want to go here. Well, the beautiful thing is the enough of building of those data points, collecting them where someone smiles back and our nervous system gets to see, oh, that was safe. Nothing bad happened. The more we collect those, then our nervous system says, you know what, my love, I think you are safe to be seen. And then not only can we feel it, but we can step towards it.
Yeah. Those little baby steps are everything. And it's all those decisions and the micro moments that really build the big transformation. I think a little bit of the danger that a lot of, you know, sort of the motivational speaker world, like, I'm just thinking like, you know, when we first got into the coaching industry, at least for me about 10 years ago, it was very much like, you know, the Tony Robbins like model and like just a lot of like, oh, go and vision boarding like your yacht and all these things. And someone's like, I can barely make rent this month. You know, why do I not trust this vision board?
Yes.
I think there's just danger in selling such a big dream, not because we don't all have the right to have that big dream, but that there's this huge gap in between where it's like, well, actually there's a shit ton of work that needs to happen that comes in these teeny tiny little micro moments that will lead you to a place where, yes, you can dream about having your infinity pool and your multi-million dollar mansion and whatever you personally want in life, which is great. I want to like highlight, underline, bold, increase the font of what you said around this for everyone listening, because the permission it grants is so huge. And there is so much, I've seen it in myself, in colleagues, in clients, like where there's this level of like the internalized brokenness and the shame that comes with that, which is so hard when you've already gone through the trauma, to then have this another layer that keeps you feeling so like really heavy and unable to, like you feel stuck again. And yeah. What I found to be so fascinating, there's a couple of things that are totally different, but let's see if I can go to both and not get us totally off track. But one thing that I found fascinating is I've actually never learned that there's these three different modes, because free, like I always understood freeze and shut down to be the same thing. And I know in like the very overview, like basic, you know, trauma resolution work, that tends to be what they talk about. And so they usually pair those two. And so I find it really fascinating that freeze is actually more of a, like you're pressing on the brake and the gas at the same time. And that the other one, which was called what again?
The other one's called our dorsal vagal complex.
There's no
gas on. So just like, think of it like the internal light switch is turning off. Yeah. And it's, I love that this work is coming more out into the world, but we live in a really weird time where I think people read one book and they're like, I'm trauma-informed or whatever. I don't know. You know what I mean? And so what kind of happens is there's lots of misinformation, even in some trainings. And so there's actually these three different places in our dysregulation, and is very rarely properly taught, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So would you say like what they diagnose as depression is primarily dorsal vagal?
That's right. What we've so here's the thing, the all of these symptoms that we're talking about, depression, anxiety, a lot of chronic illness, all of these things are symptoms of dysregulation. And so here's the problem. What our whole system does is it treats symptoms. But if you just try to treat a symptom without getting to the foundation of why is it here, then it can't ever fully go away. And so with regulating our nervous system, that is how we actually can remediate these things. And I was diagnosed with treatment-resistant depression, which I think is the most messed up thing you could ever say. Really, that is like a clinician who doesn't know how to treat depression. That is them placing it on you. And, you know, and anxiety disorders and all of that shifted when I regulated my nervous system. And that's not special to me. That's what happens when we speak to our nervous system, for sure.
Wow. I'm so excited to learn more about all this stuff. The other thing that really struck me when you were talking was there's this framework that I teach that's just, it's really complex and but also so freaking simple. It's just four questions that you sit with yourself on. And it's whenever you're envisioning, it's called the embodied power method. And it's whenever you're envisioning a new project or a new lifestyle or a new relationship, anything you want to vision. And it's so cool because the longer I teach it and the more I work with it, the more I see all the layers that it has. And essentially the first question we ask ourselves is, what do I know to be true? What can I trust? Mm. Right. And so part of why that question came up is the first question. It's also very cool. It's like tied to the dynamic and static expressions of our masculine and our feminine, but that's like a whole nother thing. I teach like a whole workshop on it. And so we'll put that in the show notes too, guys. So it's called Envision. So basically in this, the reason I started with that first question was I was like, we often envisioning processes go straight to what do I desire? And that's when we will be like $1 billion. Like yeah. we all would love a good $1 billion. I don't think anyone is a no. Right. But it's like, okay, but what do I know to be true first? What can I trust? What support? And usually when I teach it, I teach the cognitive and I teach a sort of somatic version. And I'm like, okay, can you feel all the different places that you are supported in this moment with your bones, with the earth, with my voice, with the, if there's music playing, you know, all of those things. So it's like, it just starts them by like, okay, now we're here. And it's like, okay, now we tune into the heart, into the longing, into the desire. And from this place, it's like that lawyer is going to show up, not the one that's like, you can't do shit. Okay. Yeah. So that really struck me and I'm like, great. Okay. We're doing something right over there. So that's really, really cool because it's so important that we start from that place of where am I now? And I think we often in the coaching industry shoot right into forward thinking, future thinking. And it's like, there's a piece of that that's awesome, right? Because again, we're not saying like the talk therapy or the mindset or the mental is bad. we're just saying that that's all we've been functioning in. And we've sort of discarded the animal body, the primal parts of us, all these other mechanisms that work that also have this beautiful intelligence to them that isn't necessarily wrong. In fact, it's what is keeping us alive. So I love that you just spoke to all those pieces. So let's see, I've got you for a little while longer. Where do I want to go? There's two different places. So one thing I want to address a little bit, maybe we'll see how long we stay here, but I think that there's this common misconception that also is sort of connected a little bit to all the systems of the modern world right now, which is very much like go, productivity, summertime, everything's always just in motion. But not in motion in like a very linear way. I think there's this assumption that the criteria for health is a nervous system. This is the assumption, not the fact. Okay. That the criteria for a healthy nervous system is one where you're just always at the, you're always regulated. You're always sort of in a static, like just chugging along, you know, and like on the surface, that sounds like a good idea. But I'd love for you to speak a little bit to how that's actually a myth.
Yeah, that's not possible. So, and nor would we want it, right? Like imagine this for a minute. Let's say my goal was I live only in ventral, a blissed out ventral place. That ventral vagal complex is our state of regulation. So imagine that. And so me and you were like, I don't know, on a safari together, which I want to eventually make you do with me someday. And we're just like strolling along. This would never probably be able to happen, but we're just walking along by ourselves in the Serengeti and having a lovely conversation. I'm fully in ventral. And I'm like, oh, look at these beautiful flowers. And you're like, Sarah, there's a cheetah. And I'm like, oh, isn't it beautiful? And you're like, no, it's chasing us. Run. And I'm like, no, it's so beautiful. I am so relaxed and regulated. This is the key to living. Right. You'd be like, I don't know. She just lost her mind. She's going to get eaten and I'm going to survive because I'm getting away. So I wouldn't want to stay in regulation, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not adaptive. I'd want to go into survival. So first of all, when we are not in safety, we want to be dysregulated because it's our nervous system's superpower to protect us. One of those three states, it's superpower. So we want these features. The other reason why we can expect dysregulation is this, and this is something I was saying to you earlier. A lot of folks create lives subconsciously, not realizing it, that create enough external safety that I don't need to necessarily have total control of what's happening inside. If I can just manage my external life in a way that I can feel safe. So lots of listeners know people like that. Like there's so many people that, you know, have been married 30 years. They're not unhappy, but are they totally alive and happy? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. And they ignore it. Why? Because it would mean having to look at what might happen. If I look at this, it could get exquisitely wonderful, but it could also be wonderful in an ending. But that shakes that internal sense of not feeling grounded. So we don't look at that. Or I really would love to move, but that feels kind of sick. So I don't do it. I really love to leave this 9 to 5, but I don't because it feels unsafe. So I know people that are listening to your podcast are warriors and brave healers. And that means that you're different and you're choosing to say, no, I want to live bigger. I want a bigger life. I want the life that I came here to live. I want more fullness in my life. And that means we are going to have to step towards stuff that our nervous system is not yet sure is safe. And so more often than not, and doing this work for so long, it's every single time, really. I don't think there's ever been a time where the things that we're wanting in life, things that require things like being seen, known, heard, taking up space, resting, pleasure, enjoyment, all of love, all of these belonging, all these yummy, wonderful things. More often than not, the things that we desire are things that in the past were either inhibited or unsafe. So they weren't available to us or they were unsafe in some particular way. And so we have this database where all those experiences are inside of it being unsafe or it being not available. So as we go to try to step towards the things we want or desire in our lives, our nervous system is going to say, I don't know why you're doing that. Sarah, why are you doing that? Don't you know that's not safe? We have all this information on it not being safe. You must be really out of it today. Not to worry. I'm going to stop you in the form of dysregulation. And all of a sudden, I feel anxious about that thing that I really want to step towards. Why do I feel anxious about it? It's because your nervous system is not yet on board with that the thing you want is safe to have. So if we are wanting to step in, and people can tend to feel like they've gone backwards when that happens. Like, why is this happening? I want this thing in my life. Like, I've been so excited about dating. Now I'm dating and I feel like I'm having panic attacks. Like, what the hell is happening here? Oh, you're doing it exactly right. Your nervous system just doesn't yet know fully that those things are safe. So this is why I often say we have to work at the rate of our most apprehensive part. We want to go faster, go slower. You try to muscle your way through it like the Tony Robbins way you mentioned, you can guarantee stuckness and dysregulation. So as I'm wanting to live a bigger life, that means expanding my capacity, and it always means another layer that needs to be addressed, which means dysregulation. Then the more that I regulate and stick with it, then my nervous system sees, oh, it is safe. It is safe to go on dates. And then all of a sudden you start to feel differently about it, or it is safe to be vulnerable. It is safe to take up space, to have abundance. So living a bigger life means another layer of our healing, which means dysregulation. And that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It means you're doing it right.
Yeah, totally. So in this, let's use that example of someone who's just dating again and is just like, okay, I mean, I really know I want this, but also what's happening? Yeah. What do you feel is what's the mechanism or the practices that get them from that place of, like, I get the theory that, like, okay, they have to have the template in their body a few times. They have to have the embodied experience of it is actually safe for them to finally believe cognitively that it's safe. But if they are having experiences that don't feel safe to them, how do they, like, what's the most self-loving practice or way to get them to a place where they feel safe in that?
So the first thing is, so I do somatic parts work, and we have many parts within us that have varying ages. And more often than not, when we're dysregulated, if we are in relative safety, meaning we're not in extreme, like real danger in the present moment, it means that young parts of us are showing up. Even if we are in danger in the present moment, young parts might be showing up. Really quickly, the reason being, just so people understand, I mentioned we have this database of past information in our hippocampus and amygdala. Everything you've ever experienced is in there. So we have a threat detector called neuroception. So when it looks out into the world, every millisecond of our life, it's doing this, by the way, it's saying, is that safe, dangerous, or life-threatening? Safe, dangerous, or life-threatening? Every millisecond of our lived experience, which is pretty cool. It looks to the database to figure out if your present experience is safe, dangerous, or life-threatening. So it looks to any similarities. So it's saying, what does this remind me of? Dating, okay, vulnerability, sensuality, sexuality, being seen, desiring, all of that, love. It looks to the database and it says, what information do we have on that? Well, what do we have on our caregivers? Oh, love was conditional. I was made to feel small. I was rejected. So in a millisecond, all of the sudden, I'm no longer in 2023 around this. I'm back in the place that my threat detector is reminded of in the receptacle. And all of a sudden, I feel really little. I feel like I did when I was 8 years old, when I was abandoned, and I feel small and incapable and unable. And for all intents and purposes, we have traveled back to that young part of us. So what I invite folks to do, if you're in this situation or really any situation, ask without having an agenda, how old do I feel right now? Just let whatever numeric age come up, and try not to overthink it. And if you can't get a number, ask yourself, do I feel like my adult self or not? And if it's not, or if, I feel 5, then we don't want to send a 5-year-old on a date. That would be really unsafe for any 5-year-old to be on a date, and they would be scared. And so what is really important, or what we want to do is we must say, okay, I need to pause here and get adult me present so that I can come to the aid of this young part. So if I notice, like, I feel 8 years old, and what I want you to think about is, I've got to get a hold of my adult self right now to protect this little one? Mm-hmm. So that a very simple practical tool to do that is asking yourself, is there a time where I felt like a competent protector for someone else? Like I was capable and able. When someone else, here's a thing I say a lot. When you weren't scared of their scared, meaning like somebody was scared of something, but you weren't scared of it. You knew it was going to be okay. And so bring that, embody that part of you. It's a practice I have folks continually do, like even 2 minutes a day. So you can easily call upon this part. Mm-hmm. When you get that part present, the more you do it, the easier it is to bring that part online. Feel in your body, your bigness. I sometimes imagine being a great sequoia tree, like feel into that and then comfort this young part the way that they weren't comforted. So that might be holding them, swaying with them, humming with them, letting them know they're going to stay home as you're going to go do this big adult thing. That's all really important preparatory work. And then using somatic regulatory tools while you're on the date and even driving to the date are really, really important too.
Yeah. Oh, like just humaning, you know, it takes so much work.
It's not for the faint of heart doing this, like to really say, I'm going to go for it in this life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just like keep coming back to, it's like in those micro moments, like our devotion, our commitment to a bigger life is in the little things and not in the big shiny things.
That's right.
But it can give us a big shiny life at the end of it all. But we really have to like go in there with like fine tooth comb and just get into the nitty gritty of all the things. I would love to ask you one more question if we have time.
Yeah.
And this is just a little bit about the field that you're in. You know, we went to all these cool places. We have so many cool, like great tools now that we can use on dates at home in front of our altar, in front of the mirror. And I always love, like, as much as I do personal development and coaching work, I also come from I like to sort of zoom out and look at trends and industries and big fields and things like that and see what's happening. And one thing that I find is really interesting and an important conversation that we're having nowadays is just around different fields and industries. What we can go in and possibly rearrange a little, right? So we've talked a lot about in the coaching industry, what's not working with the trauma sensitive label. But I'd love to talk a little bit about your field because I'm not in that. And I'm curious what you've seen, being that you are, a woman in that space, like what's been coming up for you or you notice is something that you would love to, as part of your work in the field, start to move towards shifting.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things. The first is just that the world of the field of mental health really is so tightly linked to colonization. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that, long time ago, but not so long ago, a lot of linked up with colonization, people who said, we're very intelligent and we're going to create these institutions where people go and get PhDs and they're very professional. And we've come up with all of these things that are going to help you, my patient. So look at already what I've done there. I have put myself on this pedestal of power away from you as the patient. There's something wrong with you and I am the savior that can help you. So already, what a problematic, and not that folks are, I'm not in any way saying that this is like what folks are doing, but when I see like the beginnings of what happened here with Freud and how we've colonized healing, that is really present. And a lot of practices that we're doing in healing are ancient practices. We know they're ancient because our systems, what we know is the healing lies within. Our systems and our bodies are uniquely and brilliantly intelligent, and they know how to heal. So the healing is not in an institution. The healing is inside of me. And this has been happening for a very, very long time. And there are many practices. If we think of somatic practices, this has been happening in ancient tribes for a very, very long time with our ancestors, right? Yeah. So this not giving ownership to that, there's not enough naming of that. And I really hope that that begins to change in my field. And I mean, there's lots of other issues. Another one of them is when I go into any of the trainings that I have been in over the many years that I've been doing this, it's predominantly folks who identify as female who are being trained. Mm-hmm. So let's say 95% in most rooms, that's very problematic, because if we want our world to heal, we need to have diversity of whom is supporting in the healing. So not only is it predominantly folks who identify as female, but also predominantly white people. And that is a major, 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 major problem. And that I don't think is being addressed in the accelerated way that it needs to be addressed. It's luckily things are starting to shift, but that's a problem. And because if we want this work to be global and we want folks everywhere to receive help, folks need to feel seen and understood. And if I might not have a lit for someone, they might say, I don't feel safe working with you. I need somebody who looks like me to feel safe. Mm-hmm. That is really important. So that's a problem. And then most of these modalities that I'm talking about inside of these trainings are created by predominantly white men. So we've got an issue here where there isn't diversity in folks who are leading. And again, the majority being men, white men, and then in who is becoming trained. And again, I don't want to undermine, like, people are doing beautiful, brilliant work and are sacrificing their lot, or not sacrificing, giving their lives for this work, but we need more of a collective experience in healing. And then two last things are that it's very insular. Like, all the books on my shelf are written for my colleagues. They're really not written for the average person. And it almost feels like to me that all of this is kept inside institutions and training programs. And if we really want to make world impact, don't we need to start speaking to people and relating to people in a way that they can be, that they feel related to, meeting people where they are. Yeah. And I think that there's really something there about the field as a whole not making this accessible to the world.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to be a part of making that change happen. But and then the very last thing, I know I'm saying there's a lot of problems in my field. There's so many wonderful things, but embodying, because here's the thing. We can only take someone as far as we've gone. And most master's programs do not even require therapists, or not much, to have their own hours of their own therapy.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, things like, you know, healings that are programs that happen after, like somatic experiences, is a wonderful one. It's 3 years. You have to do many, many, many hours of your own somatic therapy in order to finish the program. You can't do it without that. And the reason being is because if I cannot hold someone's experience in my nervous system, if I become dysregulated, their nervous system subconsciously knows she can't help me because she's scared of my experience. Mm. And then we can only go so far. Totally. So that is, one of my mentors, Deb Dana, says, if you leave regulation while you're working with someone, you should either pause or stop the session because there is no clinician or practitioner in the room. Get the clinician or practitioner back and then you can continue. And that's a tall order. But I think if we're becoming healers, it is a tall order. And we get the best gift of that is our own coming home to ourselves and healing. But embodying the work is so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Wow. Well, I love where we're going because there's so many things that we're going to shift now that we're aware of them. And I love that we're ending on this note because everything we do is about change anyways, right? Like literally all we're doing every day is about change. So if people want to find, especially on Instagram, because you guys, her stuff on Instagram, I learn new things every day. There's just always these good little nuggets. Like I haven't found anyone who just is able to take such complicated concepts and simplify them so much to make them palatable. Speaking of, you know, all the information is for colleagues and other people doing this work. Like one thing I love so much about your account is that it really brings it to us. Those of us who are like, oh, wait, I thought I learned it this other way, or I don't know much about this area. And so definitely follow her there. Obviously we'll have it all in the show notes, but Sarah, you want to let them know where the best places to find you. And if there's a particular, like if you recommend a particular resource that you have as a starting point, that's great too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm on Instagram all the time. And so if you want to find some free support or connect there, you can check out Sarah B Coaching. And then I have a couple of great free resources. I have a quiz. It's only 8 questions. And if you go to my Instagram or sarahbaldwincoaching.com is my website. But if you can find it on my Instagram too, it's a quiz where you take these 8 questions and it's going to inform you where you hang out in your nervous system the most. So I went over those 3 states of dysregulation. There's different things we want to do to regulate based on the state we're in. So it gives you a clear sense of, oh, here's where you predominantly live in your nervous system. And here's, and then you're going to get like 6 emails with, not spamming you, but with tools, actual tools, free videos, tools that are going to help you regulate. So that's a great place to start.
I love it. I'm going to go take the quiz now. I mean, I know based on our conversation, I'm like, I've done a lot of time in dorsal. Like, I don't know why I have such a hard time with that whole dorsal vagal, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for all your wisdom and for your beautiful embodiment of the work. And it's always just fun to hang out with you and geek out with you. The combo. It's so great. So thanks so much for being here and for sharing all your wisdom with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
If you enjoyed the guest on this episode, you can head on over to the show notes to get more info on their bio, their work, their website, and all the good stuff.
I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. We would love for you to rate and review the show, and I'd love to know your takeaways from the episode. You can do that by DMing me on Instagram @NadiaMunla.